Sounded good to me.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, one more take of it.
Yep. Welcome back, everyone, to the Logistics Leadership Podcast. Once again, I am joined here by my colleague, Ben Dean. Ben, as always, really great to see you.
Great to see you as well, although this one feels a bit bittersweet.
That's right. So this is the last episode of our first season of the Logistics Leadership Podcast, and we are going to make this basically kind of a wrap-up show.
Yeah, Carl, it's been a great season here. I think we've had some really awesome guests, obviously leaders and very smart people in the world of logistics, talking about what we think are the biggest issues here. And with this wrap up, I thought it would be great to highlight some of the most important things that they said. And rather than just trail off into the distance, it makes sense to share those highlights and really point out the most important things that we heard throughout this season.
So to do that, what we've done is we've organized some of these highlights into three key themes that we've heard across our guests. So the first theme is we've heard a lot of folks talk about the need to prepare supply chains for uncertainty and to build resilience into supply chains. So that's the first theme. The second theme is there was a lot of discussion and insights around the need to evolve the capabilities of the supply chain to keep up with a broader set of strategic initiatives that any given company may have. In a lot of cases, these were dynamics that were driven by changing consumer needs and wants and attitudes. And then in other cases, there were other sort of strategic initiatives around things like nearshoring. So the second category is the need to evolve supply chains. And the third is around the need to optimize supply chains. This is a battle that never ends, right? You know, that's constant refinement and optimization of supply chains, because what happens along the way is sometimes the metrics that you're solving for also change. So those are the three themes: to prepare supply chains, to evolve supply chains, and to optimize supply chains. So with that, let's dip into some of the, again, key highlights from some of our guests, starting with this theme of preparing supply chains for the future.
And Carl, I think no better than Matt Davis, VP Research over at 0100, to get this started. Because before we get into the nuts and bolts of preparation, forecasting, reacting to those forecasts, it's important to have a leadership mindset out the gate to be able to be nimble, be able to react and prepare for what's coming in supply chain. And I think he does better than anyone in articulating that. Let's take a listen.
I've been able to track some companies who have absolutely stayed ahead of the others. And 100% of the time, it's led by a chief supply chain officer where he or she is like absolutely being humble about where they are against the future and open to learning across industry.
The key is to sort of start from that place is we don't know all the answers. Let's have that humility. Let's have the curiosity. So next up, also under this theme of preparing supply chains for the future, there was some great discussion around the need to be nimble in the face of difficulties around forecasting. Forecasting is very, very hard to do, particularly in a world of great uncertainty. And so we all want to get better at forecasting, of course, but we also have to keep in mind that we've got to build sort of a structural ability to remain nimble. So let's give a listen to comments from both Michael Bender and George Holland from JT Logistics.
I think one of the biggest ones certainly is having a robust ability to forecast accurately. Because once you have a sense of this is what our demand actually looks like, you need to be able to then tune your entire operation to be able to support that level of demand flexibly enough that when conditions change, whether that's a consumer sentiment or inflation hits or supply chain issue or whatever, that you have the ability to to pivot when necessary. So the big implication for me is that the smartest companies are the ones that are figuring out how to build a flexible system as opposed to one with deep roots in a physical location in particular.
Our retailers want to have the ability to be nimble. And if they see market trends, they want to be able to shift. And some of this new world that we live in of sales channels via Instagram or Twitter, these trends go up and down really fast. And so our retailers and manufacturers, they need to be able to produce to meet the demand of the time, and then to be able to shift and be nimble to scale up and scale down. And, you know, unfortunately, unless you're selling something that has a really high dollar amount where you can afford air freight, then anything that's going to be sourced over Asia, you're going to have a forecast and a plan rollout that's going to be months in advance. And you're probably going to miss that nimble aspect if you were able to shift up and down based off of demand.
I think those were some great selections, Carl. And tying the humility of leadership that Matt talked about to Michael's conversation about forecast accuracy, I think the first thing you need to do when preparing your first forecast is recognize that it's probably going to be wrong. And so building in those mechanisms when you're preparing to reforecast, and that's more what he was talking about. There's these demand signals happening, and you need to be able to adjust the forecast very quickly and know that it was wrong and be okay with changing that at the last minute. So I think building in the flexibility into your forecasting is key there. I wish in some ways we'd almost done a full episode on forecasting.
Well, maybe let's write that down for season two. I think that's a great point.
You had evolution or evolve as the second theme that came up.
So there was a lot of conversation we got into around how supply chains are evolving, how they need to evolve to keep up with other strategic initiatives that may be critical for shippers. So these also came in a couple of sub-themes. So first, let's hear from Jason Trusley. He makes a great point in a very compelling way around how consumer behavior is evolving. Consumer needs, wants, desires are changing, and great companies find a way to build brand experiences, including the brand experience of receiving your product when and where you want it, as an important evolution in the supply chains of the world's greatest companies. Let's give a listen to Jason.
What does the integrated omni-channel marketplace look like? And the beauty of your integrated marketplace, as I think about it, is that the consumer is fully in charge of deciding when, where, and how they engage with brands. So then the problem that you have as a retailer that I deal with today, that I, you know, mapped out for Nike years ago, that I worked with Nordstrom on, is what do we want those experiences to look like? And how are they meaningfully different to create distinction and differentiation in the marketplace? I think that's the question that everybody's trying to figure out, and try to figure out how to build an agile, responsive, not reactive operating model that allows us to really deliver on those experiences with increasing degrees of uncertainty.
So right along those same lines, Carl, I think going back to Michael Bender, he talked about how the supply chain has evolved to the point where retailers and manufacturers had the power, and today that's gone to the consumer. And that's exactly what Jason's saying, right? Is that you build your supply chain from the end point backwards. But let's listen to Michael's own take on how that's evolved.
There was this period of time when the manufacturers had all of the power, right? Because they were making the product and had all the information, and both the retailers or the intermediaries didn't have any of that power, nor did the consumer. That shifted to when retailers started to have more power because they had the data and they had the shelf space, if you will. And now it's now all the power is really in the hands of the consumer. And so all of the focus right now from an e-commerce standpoint that I see is really focused on understanding the customer, making sure that you are assorting whatever it is you do in whatever space you operate in a way where you're able to bring those products and services to a customer better than the next competitor. And that's a big piece of it. Data is a big leverage point, and the personalization of it, like I said, is a big part of it as well, which presents challenges, right? Because you'd love to be able to have a system where you're doing nothing but sending one thing to everybody. But that's not the way the world's working now.
So at the most fundamental level here, supply chains evolve in large part because the flow of goods, you know, flow of goods from origin to destination is changing. And these changes happen, you know, in the most macro sense, even at the global level. Let's listen to Dilip Bhattacharjee from McKinsey, who talks about the changing flows in and out of China.
So even before the pandemic happened, essentially, we started moving things around the country again in order to power our economy. And there are two reasons why that has happened. One is obviously, you know, the China effect, if you will, at some point plateaued, right? Things stabilized across the world, global supply chain stabilized. And, you know, post-pandemic now, of course, I'm sure you're seeing, frankly, more and more stuff getting diversified from a supply chain standpoint, which benefits Mexico-Canada flows.
And then another example of a change in flows is just the continued rise of e-commerce fulfillment. You know, the mix shift from selling in brick and mortar stores to selling in e-commerce. Again, let's give a listen.
Well, the two other parts of it. One is obviously the massive growth of e-commerce, right, which adds a whole new amount of ton miles into the equation. And the second part, which is a little more underrated, is sort of North America became a powerhouse of energy manufacturing, and therefore chemicals and everything that flows from that, from oil and gas. So very interesting time to be here with all of a sudden logistics is a growth sector to be in versus sort of just something you had to deal with as because you had no other option.
This secular trend, Carl, you mentioned of e-commerce was obviously accelerated through the pandemic, but every indicator is that it's going to continue in that direction. So as our supply chains evolve to meet that consumer demand, one, it is about going faster, but there are other impacts from the consumer experience to packaging that need to evolve as well. So I think Matt Davis had another great point there. Let's take a listen to him.
If you really think about what's happened in logistics and in particular the last mile, like, you know, I just moved from New York to London. New York, I would get everything in an hour. And it, you know, the packaging got smaller, they got less waste, you know, it started to have more and more products available, like a one day shipment, you know, used to seem absurd. Like it's so easy to return things now is like, that's an integration of, for many companies, like circular product design, all the way thinking through like the point of sale and how things get collected. It's packaging innovation to think through like alternative materials and lower carbon impacting ways to sort of get products into the hands of customers.
So to put a bow on this theme around evolving supply chains, I want to go back and give a listen again to Dilip from McKinsey, who describes the atomization of supply chains. Let's give this a listen as well.
We are building warehouses that are smaller, that are closer to population centers. The average length of haul of a truck movement in the last decade has dropped almost continuously year over year as supply chain networks have adjusted to a faster, quicker home delivery based model, right? It's just a natural consequence. The middle mile is becoming shorter, faster, and a little bit lighter.
That high number of small nodes closer to the consumer, that's the atomization that Dill's been talking about, in that you kind of think about the old supply chain where it was a nuclear network. There's a big center to it and it distributes everywhere else. Whereas now we have this distributed kind of neural network of atoms. And one of the things I really tied into there with Dilip was the concept of lighter investment in each. And that's where the opportunity and the benefit comes to the shipper, is that you don't overinvest into a single nuclear node, but you have all these atomic nodes that you can wind up and wind down with limited investment in doing so. That's good as a silver lining, because a lot of the shift towards the consumer, whether it's speed, packaging, et cetera, comes with a cost to you as somebody who's shipping. So I'm looking, as we leave this conversation about evolve, to hear more, Carl, about what you can do to optimize for your outcomes within that new consumer model.
Yeah, that's a great lead in to our third theme here, Ben, which is all around optimizing. So this was something we got into discussion with across a number of our guests. And this as well is broken down in a couple key insights. So to start, let's hear from a couple folks who explicitly talked about the need to test and learn and the value of testing and learning and sort of iterating more quickly. Because with these more atomized, fragmented, distributed supply chains, of course, the complexity goes up. You know, the number of options one has to move their goods increases. There's a lot more complexity. So how do you navigate that complexity? Well, one of the big levers you have is to get into this mode of continuous testing and learning. So let's again hear from Matt Davis, who uses a one of the Amazon tenets or leadership values. Let's listen to Matt.
But like Amazon talks a lot about one-way doors and two-way doors. Two-way doors means like, hey, you can open the door and it's okay if you walk back out. You understand the risk. You've intentionally like looked to say these are all the things that could happen. A one-way door locks you into a either a big financial or customer impacting decision that like you really don't want to unwind and being able to look at it those two ways. Tech decisions are very much the same way. Is like being able to understand pilot and experimentation as like a two-way door framework versus like one-way doors that might impact your customer experience or that like you walk through, you can't walk back on. And I think sometimes just pausing to sort of think through, is this in that framework? It's probably a simple thing that people can do as well.
So this evoked exactly the conversation we had with Chris Reed at Bogdan Delivery about the need to speed up the iteration of change within your organization. It's no longer year over year. Carl, I know you sat on a panel recently where they talked about you need to be running network analysis and optimization every 3 to 6 months. And now that might be even outdated a year or two later. But let's listen to Chris on this point.
You can look back at the history and see things usually moved in these 5 and 10 year increments. And it's just not like that anymore. It's quarter to quarter. We have to live in that world where we're going to have to continue to make the investments and do the things that we need to do to see the future through. If you have, you know, an open mind, you're willing to change, and you have a diversity with the carriers, the partners that you're working with, you're going to give yourself the best chance.
Of course, you can't talk about supply chain optimization without talking about supply chain technologies. So Dilip from McKinsey has what I think is a great perspective here on the digitization across supply chains.
On the supply side, one opportunity is technology, digital technology. Our industry has embraced digital technology, you know, just like everybody else has. But frankly, because delivering goods has so many blind handoffs, lots and lots of touches, so many complexities, that the opportunity to truly take advantage of technology in this industry is immense. And we are seeing everybody experimenting with it, lots and lots of fascinating applications inside the warehouse, outside the warehouse, the way we are matching loads, the way we are, you know, digitizing traditional processes that used to be done on pen and paper, telephones, et cetera. So like our industry is like the poster child of disruption, right?
I think that's a great clip there, Carl, because the digitization of supply chain, as he says, is really improving upon the blind handoffs that have been a source of inefficiency in our industry. But this digitization journey is not unique to supply chain. And this evoked the conversation we had with Leo Ron, who's CEO of Uber Freight, where he takes us back to the larger picture of digitization efforts across industry and what we can learn for that for supply chain.
We've seen this trend in almost every industry under the sun, right? The same journey has happened over the last 2 decades in information technology and servers, where everybody used to own their own data store and their own server farm. And slowly but surely, and it took more than a decade, there was enough trust in cloud compute to be able to, okay, I don't have to own it. I can basically just share that and use that shared infrastructure.
The last topic under the broader theme of supply chain optimization that we wanted to pull out from some of our guests was the fact that in many ways, the variables that companies are optimizing around are actually changing, particularly with the introduction of carbon-related or sustainability-related outcomes that are now growing in their importance relative to customer satisfaction, speed, cost, etc. So both Dave Tuttle from Breakthrough and Matt Davis make great points on this topic about the new optimization model.
Where before I was doing my optimization model, and it's like, okay, cost and service. We're looking at cost and service. We're looking at total landed cost. Now I'm looking at cost, I'm looking at service, and I'm looking at carbon. And that is truly influencing my decision-making. And how that's impacted will have a true impact on the decision I make. And I think what a lot of these big supply chains are looking at is, okay, today, tomorrow, future, I need to make sure if I make a fundamental change in my manufacturing or distribution footprint, the total impact over some period of time is a net positive.
You tried to simplify it perhaps even further to say it's customers, cash, and carbon. That's a pretty good summary of what people are focused on.
Carbon being a relatively new optimization point in supply chains, once you've done that, I don't think you've finished this process. It's not linear. This is circular. And as customer needs change and evolve and new variables come into supply chain that we need to optimize for, we have to be prepared to do all those things in a circular basis. And I think when we talked about test and learn and going back and reforecasting, what we're talking about here is a flywheel effect, hopefully, if you're optimizing in the right way, that the last year's planning session turns into this year's preparation session.
I think that's dead on. Very, very well said. Boy, so our themes here again have been prepare supply chains for the inevitable uncertainty and to build resilience into them. There was a theme around the ongoing evolution of supply chains to keep up with these changing initiatives that companies are going after. And then, of course, the need to continuously optimize to drive continuous improvement. I feel very fortunate that we were able to hear from so many great people. I learned a lot. I hope our listeners out there could say the same thing as we wrap up season one.
As we're wrapping up this season, I just want to take another chance to thank all of our amazing guests, everyone who's listening out there. Carl, especially you for inviting me to join you on this podcast and talk about what I love more than anything, logistics. Really appreciate it.
It's been a joy. Thank you as well, Ben. Even though this is our last show for a while, we're definitely going to keep this conversation going.
You've been listening to the Logistics Leadership Podcast presented by Flex. If you'd like to learn more about the podcast or join the Logistics Leadership community, check out this episode's show notes and visit flex.com/Logistics Leadership Podcast. Keep the conversation going. Email us at leadershippodcast@flex.com. The Logistics Leadership Podcast features original music by Diaphonic. The show's producers are Robert Haskin and Adam Kappel. Here's a quick pro tip. Instead of chasing down the next episode, why not just follow the show and have it appear in your feed automatically? Thanks for joining us.